vārda brīvība un žurnālista atbildība. Mediju anatomija.
Mediju kā ceturtā vara, mediju kā instruments sabiedrības prātu grozīšanai vienmēr ir bijuši interesanti politiķiem. Vai arī biznesa haizivīm, kas gribētu pēc sava prāta grozīt politiķu gribu un rīcību, lai nobruģētu gludāku ceļu naudas pelnīšanai. Un medijas savā kabatā šiem mērķiem var būt lielisks palīgs. Kas ir mediju sagrābšana un kā tā notiek? To šodien skaidrosim mēs, Ieva Zējs un Mārija Ansone. Lai arī Eiropas Savienības dalību valstis ceļā uz Savienību ir gājušas cauri nozīmīgam tiesiskuma pārbaudes sietam, tomēr tas nenozīmē, ka laika gaitā lietas nemainās. Ungārija, Polija, tagad Slovākija ir pieredzējušas nopietnas pārmaiņas politikā, kas ietekmējušas arī mediju brīvību. Kur vairāk, kur mazāk. Šajā reizē mediju anatomijā mēs iedziļināsimies sarežģītajā mediju pārņemšanas fenomenā, kas kļūst arvien aktuālāks mūsdienu pasaulē. Valdības, bagāti indivīdi un pat tehnoloģija giganti ietekmē mediju vidi. Bet kā tas ietekmē mūsu spēju saņemt objektīvu informāciju? Varšavas universitātes pētnieks, asociētais profesors Mihails Glavackis, ir piedalījies plašā pētījumā par šo tematu un par secinājumiem, arī saruna ar viņu šīsdienas raidījumā.
Maybe we can start with a little bit of theory. What is media capture? How can you explain it in a short words?
Oh, from the academic point of view, from the media scholar point of view, we have gone a long way in explaining and researching media-state relationships. On the surface, we do have some theories, concepts, such as the classical four theories of the press, going back to the 1950s, when Siebert, Peterson and Schramm distinguished between democratic and non-democratic media systems. Then you have the authoritarian type of the media system, then you have the social libertarian type of the media system, then all of them are kind of being prone to what the others would then call the political parallelism. So media capture, from the theoretical point of view, is from the perspective of what you can read in the scholarly literature, a kind of extension, I would say, a probably more advanced model of politics in the media and media in politics.
So we are talking basically about some governmental structures who are capturing medias, not some rich people who maybe have interest in politics.
That's from the traditional point of view. The media systems analysis, which allow us to reach the state and the media relationships, has mostly focused on media and politics perspective. And then you can end up with some investigations in terms of how the politics is influencing media management, especially public service media, how the state can influence the funding of public service media in terms of financing. There is also a wide range of literature about public service media professionalism, how, you know, the cultural practice and cultural praxis, if we want, also can influence this relationship. But I would say that from the theoretical and traditional point of view, media capture has been very, very much about media and politics. But on the other hand, if you look at the Central and Eastern European case studies, there is also a wide range of literature about business parallelism. So how the business models, the rich people, as you say, the large media companies, and quite recently, global tech giants are also influencing the the media in a given society. So I would say it's a kind of new dimension that one of the most advanced theories of the media capture is now introducing the high-tech and politics relationships. And we all know what is happening with American media, ex-Elon Musk. This is a challenge also for us as researchers and policymakers, just to be sure that this dimension that includes infrastructure, personalization, algorithmization is also being taken into account if we speak capturing effect.
But I guess there is certain circumstances when media can be captured. What are these circumstances?
Oh, there are several circumstances in here. I would say that you need to have a broader look at the media stakeholders, because on one hand, you can have certain political leaders or political parties that are very, very much interested in the capture effect, right? They capture the media because of the media reach. They capture the media because they might think that they will help them to win the next elections. They also capture the media from the perspective of spreading over their ideas, ideologies, like, for instance, in Poland, for many, many years now, it has been effect whether the conservative or liberal government is in place, because this corresponds to the way how the media is reporting on the current issues of the society. But the media capture is also, on the other side, the effect from weak journalism culture or weak journalistic professionalism. Once you look at the picture or broader picture of the European media states, you can have examples from well-advanced countries when there is like a very high level of press freedom, and then you can also have the media countries when there is like a weaker media accountability system, right? I don't want to make any distinctions right now in terms of the geopolitics, but I think that some media and professionals are more prone to be captured. That's why you need to have a strong ethical dimensions, strong ethical behaviors. And in terms of the public services, you really have to remember that you serve the public. You are accountable to the public, not to politics, not to their political party interests.
But how we prevent of it? What else can we do than be strong journalists and other things you said already? Is there something that we can build in this all construction, how government are watching for journalists or...
Yes.
You know what I mean, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. I know what you mean, because that goes back to the foundations of media accountability and media's role in the society, right? So one of the answers that could be relevant is an interplay between the traditional systems of media accountability, such as codes of journalistic conduct. We also know that some of the media are highly regulated for the public good. That includes public service media. So this is both about self-regulation, and this is also about the regulatory framework that the states, on behalf of the citizens, is proposing for the media to flourish and thrive in this very, very complex mediascape. But once you ask me about how to prevent the media capture from this perspective, I think that what we are trying to do in Poland nowadays, with a very, very unclear picture on the future of public service broadcasting, is to engage in some activistic debates, calling politicians or even, you know, those who are to make the decisions on the future media law. For instance, nowadays, we are going through the public consultations. We expect to have the new media regulation that would be in line with the European Media Freedom Act. And that's why you really have to include the public citizen dimension in terms of what traditionally has been called as public consultations of the citizens panel. So you are positioning yourself as a politician, just as one of the media stakeholders, but also at the same time, you give the citizens, you give the non-governmental institutions, organizations, and also media scholars or political science scholars, sociologists, right, a room to raise a criticism on what's is being proposed in the regulation. This is an ongoing interplay that we need to strengthen our role as civil society on the one hand in terms of regulation, and then going back to self-regulation, we can speak about some other tools, I would say, those new media accountability systems that are also emerging due to social media criticism. There are some citizens who are running their own blogs about the quality of the public service media and other media firms as well. Some people are running their own media accounts, you know. So this whole issue in terms of digitalization, empowering society, I know that that sounds very, very holistic and very normative, but there needs to be a way to find a way to make it work in practice. And this is what we as the media scholars would need to be much more involved in as well.
You have a bigger research about Eastern European media, South European media, and there was Finland also in this research, like as a country with deep traditions of democracy. How big is the gap between Finland and Eastern Europe, for example?
So, looking at the traditions, again, in researching on making policies, I think that one of the biggest challenges for our region, and by saying our region, I speak about Central East European countries, is that we have always been analyzed or placed over via the Western or the understanding of the democratic values. Perhaps also that includes how old democracy is, what is at stake if you speak about professional journalism and so on. That's why if you look at the European case studies, some people would argue there is like a Western model in Southern Europe and then the Northern Europe, with a big question mark whether the Central and East Europe is actually creating the fourth model of the so-called media and politics. What you mentioned is critical from the perspective of the media system history, because there will be some cultural path dependencies. And that relates not only to regulatory culture, I would say, so how you make sure that those principles and ideas that are laid down in the regulation are being put into practice. And then on the other hand, it's also some perhaps interesting and critical cultural path dependencies from the organizational point of view, right? So whether you can still think about the top-down structures, hierarchies and silos, which have been there before 1989 and everything after. But if you look at the Central and East European case studies, it's very, very much diverse, and it's also very, very dynamic. From the research study that we found, that there are not that many Central and Eastern European countries so far that would fully developed the ideas of the European Media Freedom Act. The biggest gaps are among the management and the independence of regulatory authorities. There is also a challenge for the independence of management bodies of public service media, not mentioning, you know, the very interesting and important European dimension to strengthen media pluralism, diversity, but also the state advertising, which from, for instance, from the Polish perspective, is a completely new subject. So far, we have not been very much active and probably not fully understood how the state can influence the media content or also contributing to social polarization because of being in favor, for instance, of some of the ideological media and not supporting the state advertising with the what you would call your enemy if you speak about the government. So the picture is complex. We know that perhaps one of the most challenging European cases has been the case of Hungary. Slovakia is nowadays also following this model. The Polish model has for many, many years also been comparable to the Hungarian case. Nowadays, it's a bit different. But I think the dynamics here is very, very important. The past plays a critical role also in terms of political culture, because in addition to those Western dimension of democratic media systems, there have been a lot of different studies to highlight corruption as a challenge for the media system too, also in terms of nepotism, which I mean by, having most of your family members involved in the making of some state companies or even media institutions, but also the capture of the private media, which, as we know, has been a case of the Hungary and previous Polish government was also doing something in addition to that. So the picture is complex. I would never say that there is one universal model of Central and Eastern Europe, but to this end, we cannot really forget that our past from Central and Eastern Europe could also influence the speed of our technological revolution, right? So if we speak about the other projects that I have been involved in, which is about public service media and the age of platforms, we also see that there are some differences in the speed of adaptation to the VOD or SVOD platforms. You can position the UK, Belgium or Denmark, our case studies, as digital first thinking, while still Poland and also Italy is very, very much to find a balance between what's online and what is via traditional linear media, which is very, very important also from the multi-generational point of view. So you're not only attracting young audiences, but you also keep peace with the people who have been there for many, many years and might not be interested in doing social media of public services or, I don't know, even platforms, streaming platforms and so on. So that's very, very important issue as well.
But if we are going back a little bit to Hungary and Slovakia, these changes didn't happen in one day. Could media prevent this or not?
That's the question that we have been discussed so many, many years from now, because if you look at the Hungarian case, one of the first controversial reform that was proposed, I remember, was back to 2010. The reason why they started to do that was very, very much unclear. And I think at that time, no one really fully understood or was able to understand that this is completely new path to what we say, social and cultural polarization. Like going back to Poland, that was at that time from the 2015, also trying to follow the Hungarian case. One of the leaders, I would say the key leader of Poland's at that time government, he was famous, Jarosław Kaczyński was famous by saying, this is our dream to have Budapest in Warsaw. So that was very, very clear that he was following the path of what was happened in Hungary. So the first thing you do, you change the regulation. In Poland, that happened overnight. I think, if I remember really well, that was the 30th of December, when everyone was very much prepared for the New Year's, 2 or 3 a.m., when the parliament was still working, in the Christmas period, you know? So you had this
classical story
and classical example. Then this new regulation allows you to take control over public service media. So basically what you do, you change the governance structure, you fire journalists, you install your new journalists inside. And then what you are also trying to do at the later stage, you also try to get control over the private media firms. Although I think that this has been a very, very Polish way that the people went out to the street to raise their concerns about the freedom of the press. And that didn't happen in the end because president raised the veto. But going back to the central questions, how we have reacted, I think that we were might have not been fully aware that was a part of the broader social capture project, because the capturing of media in Hungary and then some steps in Poland, and this is what nowadays is happening with Slovak media as well, is just a part of capturing judiciary. It's just a part of capturing state companies. It's a broader process to have your people installed all over. There are some political scientists in Hungary. We do have some colleagues who are struggling also at the universities for their freedom. Basically, independent freedom do not really exist in Hungary anymore. But they always say that it's a kind of mafia state that you install, and the media just being a tool and a part of the broader social cultural reform, which in the case of Hungary and Slovakia nowadays is very much conservative right oriented.
But if we are looking on United States, this is a country with a so big history of democracy. It looked so strong. And what's happening with media there? There is no public media like in Europe. But how can you characterize what's going on there right now? Because there are attacks on media. The media are... They are very diverse, pro-Trump and anti-Trump media. So what's going on there? And can we speak there about media capture?
Absolutely, yes. I think that what we have observed in the US, it's not a new thing, has been hostile relationships between the media. I mean, like, we will call them like conservatives versus liberals, right? That corresponds to both political parties, the key political parties in the US. So one of the answers would be a growing polarization between these two. And if you even go back to the United States' position in the global media ranks, it has not been ranked as a full, you know, top 10 in terms of the media freedom, journalistic freedom, since a couple of years now. American model is quite different from the ones that we have been experiencing in Europe, because it's very, very highly privatized, as you said. There are not that many public service media. There is no public service media real a huge impact. But don't get me wrong, of course, there are some public service media in each of the state, but I think the level of their popularity is very, very low in terms of 1, 2 or up to 3%, right? There's also the different funding model. We are really, really concerned, together with the international institutions, to safeguard, to protect international media freedom, what is happening in the United States nowadays. Just yesterday, I read that there will be some attempts to re-examine the position of those public service media in the US. There is this issue with the Voice of America, which for many, many years since the war, you know, ended, the Second World War ended, has been like a window, American window, to challenging regions to even act as an alternative sources of information to the Middle East, to Asian countries. Nowadays, they are being challenged by Trump's administration as well. Like, think about the Radio Free Europe, which is also in danger in terms of or under the umbrella of lowering American the bureaucracy. Sorry, it's very, very challenging times at the moment. And what I mentioned at the very, very beginning, what is making the decline of media freedom in the US is also this parallelism between the presidential administration and key figures of the global big tech giants, right? It is very, very worrying the international institutions, organizations are appealing to the Trump's administration, President Donald Trump's administration, just to hold on with this. But I think that this is going to get even much more challenging in the next days. And we see how this will be reflecting in the new Index of Media Freedom, which I believe is going to be published on the May 3rd, which is the day of global media and press freedom by UNESCO.
But Voices of America and Radio Free Europe, it's one case and they have a court now. But there is USA were financing a lot of media all around the world. Yep. And these media outlets are in Ukraine, in Georgia, and in a lot of countries. And is there a risk that somebody will just get these media because they will need some money to exist further, and then they will gradually switch the course how they are working?
Absolutely. That's at stake also, because if you give away your alternative voices to the countries when there is only one governmental steering line in terms of politics, in terms of propaganda or media being the mouthpiece of the government, right? You're losing a democratic voice in that kind of geopolitics as well. So I think that this is very, very critical that we raise our concerns, that we make our voice to be heard, that what is going on with Radio Free Europe, what is going on with the Voice of America can really make the authoritarian regimes even stronger, because those people, the citizens, will not get the access to alternative ways of information. What's the other side, I would say, from their perspective? And we didn't really expect that to happen. But it's very, very fast. It's very, very quick. And it's, as I said, very worrying for our communities. Also, from the perspective of how major American democracy is and has been the role model for so many countries over the last years.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you so much for the invitation and this opportunity.
Mediju anatomija.
Lai gan pat viena reģiona valstis attiecībā uz mediju brīvību un valsts struktūru un politiķu iejaukšanos šai jomā nevar mest pār vienu kārti, tomēr ir skaidrs, ka riska faktori gan paliek vien un tie paši. Un arī sabiedrībā ir jāapzinās, cik svarīgi ir mediju neatkarība, bet atpakaļ ceļš pēc tās zaudēšanas būs nesalīdzināmi grūtāks kā tās noturēšana. Pie šī raidījuma strādāja Māra Jansone, Ieva Zeiza, Sendī Burkašai Cānova, Kristīna Dēle un Reinis Budze.
Vārda brīvība un žurnālista atbildība. Mediju anatomija.